Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt.
My special guest today is Gabrielle Crofts from Western Australia. To be honest with you, I don't know much about Gabby, but I do know that she has spoken at the Reclaim Australia rally in Perth before. So, Gab, can you, you don't mind me calling you Gab, do you?
Gabby's fine.
Gabby, okay. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself first? Introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Gabby Crofts. I'm an ordained priest and bishop of the old Catholic faith, which unfortunately is not recognised here in Australia, but it is nonetheless with valid apostolic succession. I'm 51. I have Bachelor of Women's Studies degree with double major politics, philosophy, sociology. Basically, I did two degrees at the same time at Murdoch Uni, and that's why it's called a double major. I also have a Bachelor of Family Studies degree in Social Work Stream, 1999. I have, for the last 24 years, worked with a lady, Alina Tolico, who was under the auspices of a charity. And what we did was we, for 24 years, we worked pro bono without pay for basically the service of humanity as women's advocates for women in severe life-threatening, the worst of the worst cases of domestic violence.
Sorry, can you just say that other one, something, humanity?
Basically pro bono, meaning without pay for the service of humanity.
Oh, I see. So that wasn't actually an organisation, but just...
No. She works through the Saints Martha and Mary Orthodox charity service, welfare service. But I work under her because she's the senior social worker and I'm the family consultant, and my expertise is in domestic violence. I'm what you would call a polymath. A polymath is pretty rare, but it means that you have expertise in many different things, not just one thing. Some people are really great at one aspect in their life. I do many different things. I'm also internationally recognized psychic medium and clairvoyant, gifted with prophecy, which is, as you probably noticed on Facebook, many of my predictions have now come true. I also am a wife, a mother. I'm passionate patriot. I'm a sixth generation Western Australian, and my ancestor was Sophia King, who was the first white girl baby born and baptised in the Swan Colony of Western Australia. So my family have been long serving patriots. My grandfather and all his siblings from Moora and Dandaragan in country Western Australia, they all served in World War II. So, yeah, I come from a background of my parents were very passionate Catholics, very much raised to be passionate about social justice, and basically a very firm, very committed Christian. I'm an anathema, actually, because a lot of people say, oh, you can't be psychic and a clairvoyant and you can't be a Christian at the same time, which is nonsense. It really is. I actually do have the gift of prophecy, and over the last 30 years, I predicted things like 9/11 and death of Princess Diana on radio 2 weeks before it happened in an accident, like lots and lots. But my focus is as a passionate patriot. I have spoken twice at Reclaim Australia rallies because I'll give you a little bit of a quick breakdown. My father's brother, his name was Anthony Patrick McNamara, and he got divorced from my auntie, Ina, and then remarried a lady from Indonesia and became a Muslim. and changed his name. Can't remember what it was, or something. I could never understand why he shunned our family, and in particular his brother, my father, who he was very close with. And it would have nothing to do with us, and he cut off from his own daughters. You know, when he died, he left them nothing. And the lady in question, his ex-wife, sold up everything in Perth and then left Australia and apparently built a mosque with all the money, or said she was going to build a mosque. Anyway, back in 1991, I studied at Murdoch University. I was preparing to do an honours degree. Alas, I couldn't do that. I couldn't afford it at the time. But I did an independent study contract with Dr. Bev Teal from Dr. Bev Teely from Murdoch University and it was called independent study contract, which meant I made my own unit up because there wasn't available one, and it was to prepare myself for research skills, which would be required of someone doing an honours degree, and I wanted to do masters as well and PhD, but alas, sometimes, as they say, things, like my grandma used to say to me, Gabrielle, what is for you will never go by you. So I've learned to accept some things like that. Anyway, I did this independent study contract, which was 6 months studying on women in Islam. And part of that was I had to look at what are the rights of women in Islam. And because I am a passionate feminist, my mother was a passionate feminist as well. And so, believe it or not, is my father, because I was raised in a family where all girls, four girls, and we were all raised to be highly educated. We were all raised to serve humanity, social justice, and love God with all our heart and soul.
12 girls. He'd better be a passionate feminist.
No, four.
Four
girls.
Even so, that's still... Yes.
And my father used to say to us, just because you happen to be born a female does not mean that you cannot achieve anything you set your heart and your soul to do. Use your mind, get an education, never use your body to get what you want, because if you use your mind, you will continue to grow as people. And so my father was like decades before his time. He was at least 60 years before his time, you know what I mean? And my mother also, she studied law and used to teach at TAFE, law and business and that sort of stuff. So I was also raised very much understanding the law. And that's what made me, in my long journey, to fight for women in domestic violence who couldn't afford to pay, for example, lawyers or whose cases were so bad no other agency had taken. You know, so, and Eleanor and I are basically in semi-retirement. I'm exhausted from focusing on domestic violence. It's pretty full on. We never lost a case in 24 years. But anyway, I focused since 1991 on women and Islam. And what I learned from speaking with seriously senior Islamic sources and persons was I was horrified as a woman, and I couldn't understand why there's no feminists talking out how women are treated in Islam. They're too scared. Yeah. They are terrified. Every woman, everyone who speaks out against Islam has been murdered over the last few years, as you know, or had death threats against them. For example, Khomeini and his infamous Satanic versus fatwa against Salman Rushdie. So every day, and I'll just give you an example of the kind of things that I've studied. I have hundreds and hundreds of books that I've read on Islam. For example, I've read this one. This is one of my favourite ones.
Islam and Terrorism.
Gabriel, Islam and Terrorism. I've got so many in the. When we have a break, I'll go and grab a few more out of my library to show you.
Okay, this just remember this is a radio show, so we can't see the pictures.
Yes. Okay, yep. And I've got another one, the self-study course on political Islam from Bill Warner. Now, I have every single one of Dr. Bill Warner's books.
Yeah, he's marvellous, isn't he?
And I also have every one of Dr. Daniel Pipe's books, and he is my inspiration, yeah. Since about 1995, I became aware of Dr. Daniel Pipes, and he is just the most incredible and amazing man. He absolutely inspired me. I've got all of Dr. Robert Spencer's books. He's just incredible. So, yeah, that's my background. My background has been very much in constant learning and in constant questioning. For example, you know, trying to get books on Sharia and things like, for example, you know, there are four different schools of Sharia law, and dependent whether you're Sunni or Shia, you know, due to the great schism, as you know, as to who was supposed to rule the Islamic Empire after, or the Caliphate after Muhammad died, peace be upon him.
All right, can we just stop there for a moment? Let's just go back to that. Let's talk about this great schism, because I know a lot of listeners have probably heard of the Shiites and the Sunnis, but we don't really understand what it was all about. Can you explain?
Well, there was a great. Well, there were four major caliphs after Muhammad, of course. But what happened was, after Muhammad died, Bakir, who was the father of Aisha, his favoured child bride, became, and then he died, and there was another guy, Usman, and blah blah blah. Anyway, what happened was they were all fighting amongst each other, and a lot of people, after Muhammad died, decided to leave Islam and ran away. And in order to save Islam, they were trying to sort out who should rule. And there was this huge fight between, as you probably have seen on the internet, for example, there's special holy days where they celebrate, the Shia will celebrate, for example, cutting their faces and eyes of the children, and basically self-harm it is, really, but to make blood run in memory of their particular saint. And it got down to two people, basically, those who followed Hussein and those who followed Ali, from memory. And that's basically why, because they both Sunni and Shia believe that they are the rightful path, and they view each other as apostates, able to be killed, because in Islam, if you're declared an apostate, then your blood is halal, or to kill you is halal, which means it is acceptable under Allah. And so this massive schism happened between the two doctrines, and for example, that is why there is so much bloodshed between the Shia and the Sunni for supremacy. Now, in actual fact, amongst the Muslim population in the world, the majority are Sunni.
Right.
And the Shia is, for example, Iran. Sunni is Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, Afghanistan.
We'll take a break now and listen to a song I wrote a few years ago. It's called One Shot of Whiskey. In fact, all the songs in today's show are about alcohol. And this is because, of course, if Islam ever gets into power, we will never see alcohol again.
Now I'm one shot of whiskey. never found the sign. I would leave all my friends behind, for that I would be fine. Now I am sitting here alone, wishing I could make it back home.
Gabby Crofts.
The Shia is mainly Muslims in Iran, and Sunni is the majority of all Muslims in the world. And they basically are run pretty much from Saudi Arabia. Now, the Saudis are Sunni, but they are also Wahhabi, which is Ibn al-Wahhab or whatever his name was, in the 1800s, and what happened was he believed that Islam had deviated from the right path, and he had a more literal interpretation and practice of the Quran. So everything they do has a basis, the Wahhabis, including the Wahhabi terrorists, of course, Al-Qaeda and ISIL. For example, they all have as their doctrine the Quran and what was taught in the Quran and Hadith, and the Sunnah, which of course is the life of Muhammad. Now, one of the problems has always been that there are other sects of, for example, Shia in Iran. Basically, the 12th Imam centers around Qom, which is one of their holy cities. Right. And they believe in what you call, all Muslims believe in Al-Mahdi, which to them is Islamic salvation savior, who is apparently going to come. Now, one of the conditions for the Mahdi coming, or the 12th Imam, it's a sect, is that the world has to be such an evil and dark and terrible place it will force the return of the Mahdi. And even Khomeini believed in it, but also even Ahmadinejad. And even when he's given talks, for example, to the UN, he's called upon the return of the Mahdi.
Yeah.
And he's called for the eradication of the Israelis, which is genocide, and yet the UN has done nothing about that. They don't censor him at all. They just let him go. But
well,
they believe that
the Wahhabis.
Of course. No, well, they're dominated by a roughly 60-nation voting bloc, which is called the Organization of Islamic Countries. And these 60 countries are an extremely powerful voting bloc. Mm. And their obsession, of course, as you know, is against the USA, even though they take the USA foreign aid money. And they are against Israel and want the genocide of the Jews. Mm. Now, when you're talking about Sunni and Shia, they both want the genocide of the Jews, which is commanded in the Quran, to fight the Jews until there's no more Jews. And they've actually got a, if you look up on YouTube, you can actually see clerics teaching right throughout the world on this eradication of Jews until the last Jew hides behind a tree and the tree calls out, come and kill him, he's behind me. You know, I mean, this is the sort of genocidal belief system that they have, and they believe passionately in Muhammad.
Demented.
They revere Muhammad. No, they're not demented. They're passionate in their belief. They're fanatical in their belief. There's nothing illogical to us. To us, we have a different paradigm, but I'm speaking from their point of view. The Islamic point of view is that they are commanded by Muhammad and they believe he was the best of all human beings, and they must, every Muslim must emulate in great detail, finest detail, even the way they do their toiletry system.
Yep.
You know, how they toilet and how they wash themselves and how they enter a toilet, for example, you know. And to us Westerners, it's very much so strange that people would be commanded even down to, you know, that level. But this is the core power and control that Islam has. It's not just religion. It's a political system. It is a social system, environmental system. It's a financial system. So unless people actually study in great depth, and I've been studying Islam daily basis, something, doesn't matter what it is, something on Islam for the last 24 years. And so that I can say to you in truth that in order to understand Islam, you must read and understand the Sirah, the Sunnah, which is the life that Muhammad led.
Mm.
Because to every Muslim, they know this man. They love this man. They believe he was the best of all humanity, and that they must, to the nth degree, follow his example and copy every single thing that Muhammad did before he died.
Okay, let's leave it there for a moment, Gabby.
Yep.
We're going to take a break right now for another song. This one is by Slim Dusty. You've got to drink the froth to get to the beer.
There's some who like the produce, and a lot who like to moan, but no one wants to pay their tax or the interest on their loan. But as you struggle on through life for all that you hold dear, remember that you've got to drink the froth to get the beer. Hey, you've got to drink the froth to get the beer. No matter what you read or no matter what you hear, it's a lay down hand you bet, you're gonna pay for all you get. Hey, you've gotta drink the froth, get the beer. How often have you heard about the overnight success, the man who made it to the top in a month or two or less? They say he got it easy with friends who opened doors, but nine times out of ten he's battled 20 years before. Hey, you've gotta drink the froth to get the beer. No matter what you read or no matter what you hear, it's a lay down hand you bet, you're gonna pay for all you get. Hey, you've gotta drink the froth to get the beer. Waste your time complaining, no one wants to know. In life there's no rehearsal, it's straight on with the show. As you're roaring down a highway, smooth as a feathered bed, keep an eye out for a sign that says gravel road ahead. Hey, you've gotta drink the froth to get the beer. No matter what you read or no matter what you hear, it's a lay down hand you bet, You're gonna pay for all you get. Hey, you've gotta drink the froth, get the beer, my friend. Hey, you've gotta drink the froth to get the beer.
This is Mike Holt, your host for the Restore Australia radio show, and my guest today is Gabby Crofts from Western Australia. Up until now, we've been talking about Gabby's life and her investigations into Islam. Gabby, I'd like to touch now on, you mentioned before, domestic violence.
Yeah.
Now, it sounds to me like you've had quite a lot of experience dealing with this. Have you noticed that there's a preponderance of Islamic women involved in this, or is it across the board? Australians,
it's across the board.
It is.
Yeah, it's across the board. Probably one in five women in Australia will be subjected to domestic violence of some form. Now, don't forget there is many different forms of domestic violence within that term, domestic violence. There's sexual abuse, there's emotional abuse, mental abuse, there's religious abuse, physical abuse, being bashed, you know, violence. Financial abuse, being restricted or unable to access monies, you know, social abuse, in other words, being restricted from seeing friends, family, loved ones, that sort of thing.
Mm.
The most domestic violence abusers, it's about power and control.
Yes.
And seeking to own the woman or control every aspect of a woman's life. You know, it's quite sad.
It seems that a lot of Australian men are no better than their Muslim counterparts.
Well, I believe that in domestic violence, there is a lot of violence, perhaps you could say. Well, it's across all spectrums of society. I mean, I've heard of judges who bash their wives, but it's all hushed up, of course. And even some of the most, it isn't just restricted to low socioeconomic. That's a furphy.
Mm.
That's nonsense. And it's not just domestic violence. It doesn't just happen in the Islamic community, but it is extremely common. And the women are even more so in Australia, I believe, personally, it's my personal belief, that the domestic violence is very much hidden because it's within the Islamic community and under Islamic law, and very much the imams are the ones who make determinations based on Islamic law. If a man is bashing the wives or mothers or sisters, you know, there's not a great deal a woman can do. In Islam, divorce is not, of course, guaranteed for a woman, but it is under the male, of course, talak, you know, I divorce you sort of thing. Mm. But women have to go to a mosque three times and they must beg three times an imam for a divorce before she has any chance. Most divorces aren't granted because it's perceived that she is the one that's at fault if her marriage isn't working. And when there's domestic violence, of course, we all know that that's permitted, you know. And in actual fact, if you look up YouTube or anywhere on the internet, you will see scholars of Islam who give lectures on just that very, very, very thing, how to beat your wife under Islamic law.
And yeah, I've seen videos.
In accordance with Sharia law. They can beat a wife with a green stick not exceeding the width of their thumb. Now, people need to understand that in Islam, there can be no reformation. It will be impossible because Muslims are trapped because they are taught and brainwashed from birth. They are taught that there can be no new inventions in Islam. And actually, since about 1100 AD, Sharia law has been fixed.
Mm.
So they believe that there can be no new interpretations of Islam.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up.
1000 AD.
Yes.
No, there cannot be. There cannot be because they believe that there is on gold tablets in heaven a perfect Quran that is written in heaven and abides with God. And they believe that the Quran and the revelations that Muhammad handed down are perfect and cannot be changed or altered for eternity. Mm. And therein is the trap.
That's
they
right.
do not see it as a book of literary word or in contextual literary words or teachings for 632 or so AD. You know, they do not see it as that. They see it as being, this is the eternal word of God. And according to Dr. Bill Warner, he actually states in his books that Allah is not the same God of the Jews and Christians. Allah is, in actual fact, the principal God of Muhammad's tribe, the Quraysh.
Mm.
And it is the moon god who was married to Sin, the sun goddess, and they had three daughters, Al-Lat, Al-Manat, and Al-Uzzah. And therein was the satanic verses where Muhammad said that, no, I didn't say that. It was the devil possessed me, and out of my mouth he made me say those words, because he started vilified and mocked and jeered by, for example, the Jews and the Christians, when he said, yeah, you can, basically you can worship the three intercessory cranes, which, as everyone knows, is the three goddesses. And if you look at archaeology throughout the entire Pan-Arabic region, there are thousands upon thousands of artifacts being actually found of Allah, the god, and he's always got the crescent moon. Because it is the actual moon god. But now, of course, in Islam, they teach that if you criticize Muhammad or any aspect of the religion of Islam, they will behead you. They will kill you. There is no such thing as freedom of speech, freedom of religion. There is no tolerance to any other religion except Islam. And in actual fact, about 60% of the Quran is Muhammad and him decreeing his hatreds for different people who mocked him, who jeered him, who disbelieved him, who disbelieved his signs. For example, Muhammad said that he split the moon in two. Yeah. And he also, you know, said that he went on a night journey. And that's why the Muslims believe that Jerusalem is one of their main, or the third, I think it is, main religious place in Islam, because when Muhammad woke up from a dream, he said that he had been taken by Al-Burak, the furthest mosque. Now, interestingly enough, Al-Burak is actually a mythical creature of the Zoroastrian religion.
Well, actually, that brings us to our next segment, which is Mighty Mo. And the first story, I don't know if you know about Mighty Mo, but Mighty Mo is basically a parody on Mo, Muhammad.
Well, that's very dangerous, and I just want to...
Oh, I don't
whoever's
care.
Whoever's doing that, it's very, very dangerous.
I don't care. But
so many people have died.
It doesn't
it's
matter.
It's just terrific.
Let them try. But the... it starts out with Mighty Mo on Al-Burak going to Jerusalem. So let's have a listen to that and sit back and relax and have a bit of a chuckle.
Oh, I just want to say, for the record, I didn't make that segment. I'm rather attached to my neck.
Yes, okay. But let's have a listen and a bit of a laugh, and I'll be back soon.
Allah! Mighty Mo! It's dark. Very dark in Moland. Yeah, it's always dark in Moland. But Mighty Mo is not worried. He's riding Al-Burak, his trusty white-winged steed. Mighty Mo is on a mission, a flight from Mecca to Jerusalem, soaring across the Asia dark sky. But all is not going well. The in-flight service is much worse than usual.
Hosteen, where is my Al-Burak?
You're up. Why, it is to the east, sire.
Not Iraq, you cretin! Iraq! Bring me my Iraq!
Most mighty Mo, Was it not you that decreed we must no longer imbibe alcohol?
Imbecile! That decree applies only to the stupid goats following my wonderful new religion, Islam. I invented it, and I make the rules. Now, bring me an arak! Now! How dare you serve me wearing a mustache, woman?
Might be more. I am not a woman. You yourself decreed that women are not fit to pick up the dung emitted from the arse end of your beautiful steed, Al-Burak.
You useless piece of camel dung! Send me a doe-eyed houri. She must be dressed in a diaphanous costume to serve me my arak. You know how much I like to look at a sexy woman.
I hear and obey, almighty mole. Now the hostie slunk off to the back end of Al-Burak, where he clapped his hands, calling out, Oh Allah, hear my cry! Mighty Mo, your prophet has commanded me to seek a houri to serve him some arak. Nothing happened. Crawling closer to the base of the great horse's tail, he stood carefully, balanced against the force of the wind blowing past as they sped through the night, and he called again. O great Allah, sparkling in the sky, like a constellation of stars, please, please send a houri for your prophet's delectability. Suddenly a great burst of light flashed through the sky as a bolt of lightning struck the tail of the great horse. That wonderful steed hardly paused in his graceful trip across the sky. Instead, he shat himself. And as the dung fell into space, the brown, steaming, stinking balls coalesced into a human form and floated up to land on the back of the horse. Before the hostie, a beautiful houri, clad in a diaphanous costume, appeared, still steaming. Her soft skin shone with a brown sheen seen only on a pile of fresh-laid dung. Her eyes flashed like the leftover sparks of a lightning bolt. Funny, that. She knelt before the muscular hostie and intoned,
My lord, what may I do for you?
Stand up, you stupid wench. I am not your lord. Take this arak forward to our master and great prophet, Mighty Mo, and serve him. Obey his every command. Well, the houri took the arak and quickly pushed the burly hostie in the chest. Unprepared, he tottered even further backwards off the great horse until he slipped right over the rump of the great Al-Burak and dropped screaming towards the desert below. Smiling, the houri muttered,
Stupid man! May all the 72 virgins who attend you in paradise be bronzed Aussie lifesavers, hung like stallions, and drunker than a sheep she rocked on a 7-day bender.
With that, she turned and slunk towards the front of the horse, her hips rotating in sexual invitation. Stay tuned next week to find out what happens to Mighty Mo. Will he drink the arak the houri invites him to drink? Will he succumb to the wiles of this beautiful houri? Hey, don't hold your breath. The answers are 7 days away, and we want you back here alive next week. Mighty Mo!
This is Mike Holt, your host for the Restore Australia radio show, and that was Mighty Mo. And we're starting the Mighty Mo series again from the beginning, because some of you probably haven't heard it before. That was the first chapter in the story, and Mighty Mo headed off to Jerusalem on the mighty Al-Burak. My special guest here is Gabrielle Crofts from Western Australia. She's a scholar, a women's rights campaigner, seer.
Women's advocate,
okay, yes.
Yeah. I'm a seer, and I'm gifted with the gift of prophecy.
I'm not being facetious here. I just
no, I understand.
Can I? Am I going to win the lotto?
No.
Damn. I knew I wouldn't.
Yeah. My prophecies are very much largely the international events and things. I don't get dates or times, but I do get specific episodes or specific attacks or specific events.
Oh, well, if you ever do hear I'm going to win the lotto, let me know.
Honey, listen, if I was able to predict lotto numbers, don't you think I'd be rich?
Oh, yes.
It's not, I don't have that kind of gift. My gift is more on prophecy of events internationally.
Yeah. All right, getting back to serious
and
issues here.
Yes. All right.
I'm very interested in your work with women especially. I have a friend out in West Queensland who has a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been working together, and she has told me that if we ever get any Muslim women who want to leave their husbands and get away from Islam and just flee the whole sorry thing, she would be quite willing to put them up on her farm and help them to change their lifestyles and become true blue Aussies and get away from Islam.
There'd be a lot of deprogramming involved. You'd need to warn her. A, it'd be very dangerous, but two, B, she would need access. Any Muslim woman who wanted to do that would need access to very, very qualified psychiatry. Because don't forget that in every religion that has aspects of fanaticism. There is a great deal of conditioning that has been from birth. And, of course, Muslim women are conditioned from birth to be passive, to not cause any trouble, to not bring harm or shame upon their families, to not cause any form of dishonor to their families. In Islam, people need to understand it's not just a religion. It's also social and political and financial and all those aspects.
Legal, yes.
And in Islam, they very much are family, clan, tribe, and then the Islamic Ummah. And to a Muslim person, their allegiance will be always first and foremost to the Islamic Ummah. And in actual fact, in the Hadith and also in Islam itself, it teaches that if someone were to say, where are you from? You must not say, I am from Lebanon or Syria or whatever it was, the country that this particular person quoted. I haven't read this for some time, but I remember it very clearly that Muslims are taught you are to say, I am a Muslim and your allegiance must always be to the Islamic Ummah and the Caliphate. In other words, whoever is the political ruler of the political Caliphate.
Right.
That
causes us quite a big problem then, doesn't it? Because, first of all...
And the Sharia, yes, absolutely.
Well, all of these Muslims who are living here in Australia and claiming to be true blue Aussies, as I heard today on a talk radio talkback show... are actually lying to us then, aren't they?
Called taqiyya.
Right.
And when Muslims are in a kafir nation or kafir, which is a non-Muslim, anyone who's not Muslim is called a kafir or a kafir. And basically they are told in Islamic doctrine, which, you know, basically they're allowed to lie if it is for the sake of Islam, to spread Islam through the hijra. H-I-J-R-A, Hijra, which is the journey. And what that refers to is the journey by which at night time, dressed in women's clothes, in order to escape his enemies who wanted to kill him, Muhammad fled from Mecca to Medina, where he became a powerful leader and political leader then. And so what they are told is that you may owe no allegiance to any nation or leader, especially not to any nation that is ruled other than Islamic law by a kafir. And they are taught in Islam that they must go out and spread throughout the entire world through hijra or migration, which is the first step of jihad, or the first phase of jihad.
So that's what's happening right now in Europe, right?
Yes, yes.
And what was happening under the Labour Party?
Refugees. Yeah, this is not genuine refugees. You will find the only real genuine refugees are the Christians and Yazidis and the Baha'i, okay? There have been some Baha'i discovered. But the preponderance of the flood into Europe have been young men of jihad age who are basically, it is an invasion army, just unarmed, as far as, you know, people realize that.
Well, it didn't take them long to get armed in Paris, did it?
No. Well, that's because you have a fifth columnist amongst them in France, because over the last 50 years, France have allowed 8 million.
Pretty stupid, isn't it?
Well, there are actually 755 specific streets or areas known as no-go areas in France. There are at least 55 areas of no-go areas in England as well. And this is based on actual Islamic doctrine, which is Hijra, the migration, stage one of jihad, which is to go out, spread Islam, and demographically through mass population explosion, you know, and breeding, et cetera, and having children. And that's why they have full wives.
Okay, so now this brings us then to what Restore Australia has been saying for a long time now. Perhaps I should explain my background just very briefly. I first came across Islam when I was about 12 years old. I went to high school in Penang in Malaysia.
Right.
And, of course, I met Malays and Chinese and Indians there. And I never really felt comfortable around the Muslims. I didn't like what they were doing, and I just didn't understand why. But later on, as I went through life, I learned more about Islam. So by the time I got back to Australia, I had a very good idea of what Islam really was, because I got my first Quran back in 1985. I went to the Pakistani embassy and asked for a copy. I had to sign an undertaking that I would not desecrate the book. And I took it home and I read it and I started thinking about it. And I very quickly came to understand why I had always felt very uncomfortable around people of Islamic faith, because basically they're not human.
Sorry, Mike, they are human beings.
They may be human, but they don't act like...
They are human, but the boundaries of society of which the Western culture... Remember, our Western culture is based on 2,000 years of progress.
That's right.
Of reformation, particularly post, you know, we did some pretty horrendous things in terms of, you know, the witch trials, and, you know, we've had all sorts of pogroms against different people. But the thing is, the Western culture was based on and learning about the value of life, of a human being, and based on the golden rule, which is do unto others as you'd have them do unto you.
Right.
And respect for the individual human beings' lives. Now, that is something that is a Judeo-Christian belief system. That is a core fundamental belief of Christian, Judeo-Christian societies or civilizations. However, under the Arabic, Islamic, Muslim situation or their structure societal-wise, they view us as like animals. So their view of us is completely different to that which the Judeo-Christians believe.
You're listening to Mike Holt on the Restore Australia radio show, and my special guest today is Gabby Crofts. Each week we read out a verse from the Quran. The verses in the Quran are called surahs. This is Surah 4. Number 74. let those fight in the way of Allah who sell the life of this world for the other. Whoso fighteth in the way of Allah, be he slain or be he victorious, on him we shall bestow a vast reward. Now the martyrs of Islam are unlike the early Christians, who were led meekly to the slaughter. Those Muslims who are killed in battle and in destruction for the cause of Allah are promised a very special place in heaven, or what they call paradise. And in that paradise, they have huris, beautiful women who are constant, eternal virgins. The rivers flow with wine, which is kind of funny when you consider that Muslims are not allowed to drink wine in this world. I suppose they also get to eat pork. But this surah, Surah 4, verse 74, is the theological basis for today's suicide bombers and martyrs. And if we are going to fight back, we need to understand why these people do this. They believe they will go to paradise. Of course, they don't have much of a life here, and that's the problem with Islam, isn't it? This has been your verse from the Quran for the day. You're listening to Mike Holt on the Restore Australia radio show, and my special guest today is Gabby Crofts. Gabby, we were talking before the song about our attitudes towards life compared to the Islamic attitudes, and you also mentioned that Islam can never ever be reformed. You know, I've heard people try and say that we should be doing this, and in fact, I think it was Q Society even came up with a document that they were asking Muslims to sign, saying that they would try and reform Islam, and I always thought that was a bit silly because
no, that's apostasy. Yes. They would be. See, under Islamic law, if you try, there can be no modification, there can be no new invention in Islam. And under Sharia, under Islamic law, anyone who tries to reform or change the words that Muhammad handed down from his God Allah must be put to death. They are immediately apostates, killed.
Yes. So, which brings me to the question now. We have been invaded by Islam. We know that they've come here with evil intent to undermine and destroy our Western way of life and our Western civilization, to impose Islam on us. Now,
that is that's directly from the Quran.
Yes. Now, a lot of us have already seen this, and we know that there's only one way that we're going to stop this, and this is through all-out war. Our politicians are not game and not ready to even face that possibility at this stage. France is getting there after the attacks. But even so, I think most politicians don't understand the gravity of the danger that we face. And I've been saying for a long, long time now, there is only one solution to this Islamic invasion, and that is all-out war. And we have to be as ruthless as they were during the Spanish Inquisition. Now, you probably have a very deep insight into what the Spanish Inquisition was and how it happened and why. So can you tell us a bit about that?
Ferdinand and Isabella, they were fighting the Moors. Now, what happened was the Moors were the Muslims who had invaded Spain, as indeed they constantly attacked all over Europe. And what happened at Cordoba was where they actually won over the Christians, and then they built the Victory Mosque, of course. Now, King Ferdinand and Isabella fought bravely against all odds, and they beat them, and they forced the Muslims to leave Spain, but they also forced the Jews.
Wow. So can you tell us how they did that?
They had a war which was very bloody and very vicious and very bad. I mean, it caused thousands of deaths. Mm. But you see, what was happening in Spain at the time was that every year, for For example, the caliph in Morocco, I think, no, Turkey. Yeah, in Turkey. Anyway, every year the caliph would say, send me a certain number of blonde hair, blue-eyed virgins. Mm. And I think there was one year there was 8,000, which had to be rounded up by the Muslims in that were ruling Spain at the time, rounded up. And then these women were put on boats, and many died in the journey. And they were taken for the slave markets and for the caliph himself to choose of all of them which ones he wanted. Mm. And the rest were just sold in the marketplace. People don't understand that over a million white Christian Europeans from coastal areas particularly were preyed upon over an 800-year period. Mm. And it was just relentless, non-stop jihad against the West. And these people, many died during the journey in the ships. And if you were basically a white Christian sold into slavery, your life expectancy was pretty poor. That, however, there was one woman who was the sister of the wife of Napoleon who was captured. And she ended up the favoured wife of the caliph. And her son actually became caliph after his father. I can't remember the exact name, but I remember this story, reading it on the, you know, history and stuff. But in terms of all-out war, I'm different in being more book-focused, okay? I believe that instead of all-out war, I believe very much in the Christian thing, but the thing is, a defensive war is committed in Christianity. I don't believe you just round up people and kill them. What I believe is you use the power of the government through legislation to prevent any further mosques being built. And in actual fact, deport anyone. And my belief is we should be deporting anyone who makes a criminal act in Australia. If you are Muslim and you've come here and you have sought sanctuary and you have bit the hand that feeds you and you have, for example, raped or robbed or murdered or anything like that, I believe they should be incarcerated and then deported.
And no their questions. Families.
And their entire families, absolutely. Mm. But the thing is, I don't think it's right to kill people just for the sake of your religion.
No, but
that's not my Judeo-Christian belief. However, I do tell you solemnly, Europe, and I prophesy this, there are going to be Islamic attacks in Rome, in London, more attacks. There'll be three more in France. Mm. I pick up two in Germany particularly. I have also picked up an attack in Sweden and Denmark, Portugal and Spain. Now, over the next few years, that's all going to happen. Mm. I believe that there is going to be three major terrorist attacks in Australia, in Queensland, in Melbourne and Sydney. I've dreamt these, and I've been shown a map and where they would happen. And the Rome one's going to be particularly horrific. So anyway, I believe that in order to prevent further atrocities happening, we need to immediately cease any Islamic immigration. Those that are already here, they need to understand that if you break the law, you're out.
Mm-hmm. Even if they are Australian citizens and have lived here for three or four generations?
Yes. And if you break the law and you're Muslim, you're out.
Where do we send them?
To a Muslim nation. There's Indonesia, Malaysia, and any one of 60 other nations.
But they won't take them. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, I'm seen as being very much radical, but in this modern era, I believe that to speak the truth and to actually inform others and educate others is seen as hate speech, which it isn't. I also feel very, very strongly that all of the refugees, I'd say 95% of all the so-called refugees that are flooding into Europe are an advanced army of ISIS cells, young men, jihadist men that have been sent there to a defenseless, unarmed, none have got guns, unarmed civilian population in order to create mass chaos, violence, and terror. And that is what Muhammad taught. He said, strike terror in the hearts of the kuffar, which is kafir, or non-Muslim, the infidels. So, no, I don't believe in just killing for the sake of killing. I think that's evil. You don't have to be evil. What you do is you use legislation to prevent any more mosques being built and to stop all Muslim migration. It's the only way Australia is going to be protected. Yes. As it is, I believe that anyone who, you know, if you are peaceful Muslim, if you're going to stay here and behave yourself and assimilate and follow our laws,
then leave Islam.
That, no, you can't do that. I mean, come on. You
well,
cannot
can't
force another
here
person.
Mike,
I understand your position. Mm. I respect, your position. I respect you. You know that. You're my friend, you know. But I have to say, look, religious freedom is one of the core freedoms of democracy. We're either democracy, or we're not.
Here's another song by Dave Dudley, Two Six Packs Away.
I got on my wheels and I went on the town dragging. I hit a big old tree, looked like I wrecked a beer wagon. I got a hospital bill and a judge waiting for me to pay. I had a sweet little honey just 2 6-packs away. I told the judge there was 2 trees and I went between them. He said, from what I hear, your condition, that's the way that you seen them. He laid down that hammer and he gave me 90 long days. I had a sweet little honey just 2 6-packs away. Sunday rolls around, that's my cigarette day. And my baby's still awaiting, just 2 6-packs away. When I get out of this place, I'm gonna say I ain't never saw one. Going down to Joe's and have that big bartender draw one. Boy, my throat is dry and my mouth feels like clay. And my baby is awaiting, just 2 6-packs away. And my baby is awaiting, just 2 6-packs away. And my baby is awaiting, just 2 6-packs
this
away.
This is the Restore Australia radio show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Gabriel Crofts from Western Australia. We were talking before about the problems that we're having with Islam and perhaps even the coming war. And I want to clarify something I said before. When I was talking about waging all-out war, I was referring to the Inquisition and the way that the Spaniards eventually ousted the Moors from their country. And the only way they did this was to completely destroy Islam. And that is what we're going to have to do here. Now, there are many ways to do this. War is one way. And unfortunately, I believe that the Muslims will force us into waging war on them, civil war. But as you pointed out, Gabby, we also must use our laws. And at the end of the day, the law is paramount. And that's why we will win.
I believe, and this is what I prophesy, that civil war is coming in Germany and Sweden.
Yes.
I believe they are, and France. I believe that if you look over the next decade, I believe that each of those nations in particular and England are going to continue to deteriorate to the point that the white Christians will be leaving, and I feel that there will be actual breakdown of law and order, especially in Germany and France, Sweden and England. And I believe that there will be an outbreak. I think first possibly an outbreak in Germany and France of civil war. And you will see many churches being set on fire. I prophesy many churches being put on fire. I actually prophesy many cars being set alight, many riots, violence against the white French, the native French. And I believe that the government of France will be thrown out at the election. I believe very strongly that the government of Merkel will be overthrown and she'll be thrown out, but it's too late. The enemy is in the gates,
yes,
so to speak. And I believe that there's going to be major terrorist attacks hitting France again, and there will be major attacks in France, Germany, Rome, Sweden, Portugal, Spain. I feel there'll be more train bombs, I've felt.
Yeah, everywhere the Islamic virus has hit, there's going to be trouble. We can see this. I mean, you don't even have to be a seer to see this.
I've been warning of this since 1998.
Yeah.
I predicted a massive amount of things, and I put it on the internet back in 1998. I used to have an MSN community called the Psychic Safe Sacred Space. And in August of 1998, I predicted a massive amount of things, including the increasing radicalization. And this is before it was even thought about. And I actually predicted like 9/11. I predicted massive amount of things, and they've all come true. You know, I might have got the timing or the dates wrong, but the actual situations I got right. And I do believe, and I do prophesy, that there is more attacks coming to France and Germany and Rome. Rome is going to have blood on its streets in ways they never thought possible.
Well, this is this brings me to another question. What is going to happen, you know, because the people are rising up. We've all seen that our governments are corrupt and bereft of any moral compass anymore. They're there for the money, they're there for the power, and they don't serve the people. Now, this is why we set up Restore Australia. Restore Australia is actually a part of the Foundation for National Renewal, which has been going since the turn of this century. And it was set up to assess our constitution and then come up with ways to make it work better. Well, after 15 years of work, we have come to the conclusion that we can't fix what is broken. Our constitution that was passed in 1901 was basically abrogated by Gough Whitlam and Bob Hawke, and they set it aside and set up a new constitution, which was never, ever ratified by we the people voting in a referendum. So everything that the governments have done since then has been illegal. However, the longer we let this go on, the more it becomes acceptable. And this is something that we have to guard against, because it is corrupt, it is wrong, morally wrong, it's bankrupt, and it's time to put a stop to it. So what we're trying to do now is to get the people to understand. And actually, the Muslims are playing right into our hands. By all these terrorist attacks, people are starting to wake up and say, hang on a minute, our government let these people in here. Our government has allowed them to run riot. Our government is paying our tax money to these bludgers, and our government is not serving we the people. So it's time for a change. And here in Australia, I think we're probably way ahead of the rest of the world. And I know from my contacts in Canada and America and the UK and even in Denmark, they're all looking at what we're doing here for inspiration, because we are way ahead in the fight back against Islamization.
Okay. As an Australian citizen, I believe passionately in using the legal foundation basis constitution.
Right.
And getting, for example, Reclaim Australia and the Liberty Alliance, people who are decent, who are honourable, who are patriotic Australians elected. I don't agree with overthrowing governments by putsch or by coup d'etat. And I do not believe in violent overthrowing anybody. I believe what you do is you use the law. You stay within the law. You do not harm another human being. You don't go out and just bash somebody because they're Muslim. That's evil. Mm. You know, you don't do that. And you don't form a revolutionary army to try and take over. No, you don't do that. We have very clear constitutional rights. And under those, we have elections. And it is up to Australians to the law. You do not step outside of the law, because once you do, you are therefore a criminal.
Well, no better than them.
Exactly. You're a criminal not only in the law, but you're a criminal in people's minds. And I am against any form of violence. I believe in peaceful protest. I believe that you use the legal system to get people elected into Senate and in the House of Reps, who are patriots who are not going to put up. And I think Pauline Hanson should be re-elected. She's an amazing woman. She warned us a decade ago what was going to happen.
She did.
You know, and I believe in, for example, I am particularly interested in the Liberty Alliance with Senator Bernard Gaynor. I think he's a very brave man, and
He's not a senator yet, is he?
I doff my hat to him. I actually hope very much he does. But I cannot be part of anything that is violent or calls for violence, because that goes against not only myself being a priest, but also being a patriot, because you cannot step outside the law to change the law. You must work within the law in order to change the laws so that everybody is safe.
You do know that I'm running for the Senate too.
Good on you. I hope you get in.
Gabby, I'm afraid we're going to have to stop there because we've run out of time. But I want to thank you very much for coming onto the show. And perhaps in the future you'd like to come back and we can continue this. Yes.
Oh, look, I could talk you into the middle of the next week. There's so much about Islam that needs to be expressed.
It does.
But remember, my word to the patriots is no violence,
no
radical extremism, no fanaticism. Go to the ballot box and vote for candidates who will support change, real change that is closing our borders, but allowing the Yazidi and the Christian who are being genocided, raped, beheaded, their children enslaved. Let those people in and have their so-called Christianity beliefs tested, because a lot of Muslims are pretending at Nauru to be Christian in order to be let in.
Yeah.
And I'm warning you now, you know, we need people who can get jobs in immigration, who understand Christianity and can test these people and work out, yeah, nah, you're full of it. No, you're not a real Christian. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. And it would help, of course, if we had a prime minister who wasn't a power-hungry demagogue who was
He's
in there.
He's weak.
He's terrible.
He's actually weak and gutless and spineless. And
yes.
I'm sorry he is our PM, but the way he went about overthrowing an elected head of a party, to me, was just despicable and disgusting, and
yeah.
It showed his greed for power. And where you have greed for power, you have
corruption.
A capacity to be corrupt.
Mm.
Now, this Paris Agreement that they want to sign will transfer over our sovereignty of Australia to the UN, and that is what we need to start writing to every single Liberal parliamentarian and Labour parliamentarian and independent and say, stop this man from treason, because that, if you transfer constitutional powers such as through treaty and under the Constitution External Treaties section, you are committing treason.
Yes.
If you sign any agreement which transfer power to a foreign body that is unelected by any Australian, that is high treason.
It is.
And he needs to wake up. He's a lawyer. He is well aware of it.
Oh, of course he is. All right, Gabby, thank you very much, and
All right, darling,
I look forward to talking to you soon.
May God bless the Patriot Movement. May we be protected. May we be safe.
Thank you, and I hope you'll be at the Reclaim Australia rally this Sunday.
I hope so too.
And,
I'm going to do my best to get there.
I'm organising the Reclaim Australia rally in Brisbane. Everything is ready, and we're ready to rock and roll.
I'd love to have a speech one day. yeah, anyone send me a ticket, I'll be there.
Okay. Thank you, Gabby.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
This is the Restore Australia radio show with your host, Mike Holt, signing off. Until next time. And here's a message to Islam. You can try to deny us our freedoms and our rights. You can try to impose your idiotic ideology on us, but you never will, because we believe in freedom, and we will fight you to your death.